Welcome to Just Now Possible with Teresa Torres.
My name is Martin. I'm the CEO and co-founder of REST. We're building an AI sleep protocol. We help people during 8 weeks to solve their sleep problems and difficulties for good.
I'm Ignacio, and I am the CTO for REST. I'm in charge of the engineering team, basically. And so we can discuss about how we're building stuff around this AI tool.
Excellent. And I understand from browsing your website that you're building an AI sleep coach, which I'm excited to get into. I know this is a big challenge for many people. Before we get into the product itself, tell me a little bit about just the origin story of the sleep coach. How did you identify this as a problem to solve?
Yeah, it's been a bit of a long journey with a few years of work. And it didn't start with a sleep coach. As many products happen, there's pivots and changes. They actually still have a product going called Podcast App, which is a podcast player. It's a pretty large independent podcast player in the App Store. And we found out that a good chunk of users at night used it, and they were listening to content to fall asleep or to fall back asleep. And they were using podcasts as a way of kind of distracting from their racing minds, which is a very common problem that people have these days, lots of stimulation and stress. And so we were really curious, thinking of like opportunities and ways of continuing to grow that product if sleep or sleep audio could be like an interesting use case. And so we actually started building a sleep audio app several years ago, and actually doing some research also. We can talk about it. I know that's also a topic that might be of interest. That sent us a bit of a rabbit hole, I would say, on this, the world of sleep, understanding what were the different like user segments and how they went about solving sleep problems. And eventually we uncovered a few segments that we thought were really interesting, and that led us, and AI started exploding and booming. And I think we saw a glimpse of, hey, we could use AI to tackle these user segments and give them a more complete solution around sleep, not just a way of falling asleep at night in which they're restless.
Yeah, I love this. Okay, so you have still today, your company has a podcast app. And one of the things that you noticed is that a use case your users were using your podcast app for was to help them fall asleep, to listen to content to help them fall asleep. Did you start, like when you first uncovered this use case, were you creating like audio content for this use case? Because I feel like most podcast apps, they're a player. They're not focused on content. Tell me that first bridge. You uncovered this use case. What did you do?
Yeah, at the time we were definitely exploring the idea. So we launched this podcast player back in 2017. And a little later than that, we went to Y Combinator and raised some money and did all that. And we experienced a lot of growth because at the time podcasts weren't yet mainstream. And yep. Spotify wasn't doing it. YouTube was in that world, but it wasn't like doing much there yet. And Apple neglecting the app a little bit. So we experienced a lot of growth. But at some point we were wondering, okay, what's next? Now, right. How do we continue differentiating? And we thought about creating our own content. So we started creating our own content, did different experiments, and we saw the sleep use case as a potentially interesting segment. And yes, we partnered with some creators, therapists, and we started creating some content, also inspired a little bit by Calm's and Headspace's success story. Mm-hmm. So we did a combination of that, but also curation around like the best podcasts for sleep, which is content that people were already finding, but our app wasn't necessarily designed for that. So at first we built it a little bit into podcast app, some categories, some content, and then we said, hey, maybe this could be like a separate app, goes really deep in the use case of sleep. There's always this tension between like a general purpose versus single purpose vertically. Yeah. So we said, okay, maybe Calm has become a huge company. Maybe there's a play here that we can do something around sleep. And so we started building REST as an sleep audio app. With original content, but also just trying to showcase the best podcasts out there and their thought for sleep.
Yeah, this is amazing. And was it primarily podcasts? Like I know one thing people do to help with sleep, they'll listen to like tones, especially if they have like tinnitus, right? They'll listen to tones to try to cancel that out. Were you also exploring that type of content as well?
So the type of content that we had, so there was content that you could kind of obviously see maybe for sleep, and then not so obvious content. So the obvious one, maybe it's like sleep stories, meditations, white noise, soundscapes, even ASMR. And then the not so obvious contents were more like traditional podcasts that sometimes can go a bit long and that can get a bit dense.
Yeah. I believe this because my husband and I take long drives and we often listen to podcasts. And he has this, I forget what it's called. It's a super popular history podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And the episodes are like 3 hours long. He'll put it on. I love history, but there's something about the tone of the voice. He'll put it on and within 5 minutes, I'm like, oh, I'm sleeping. so we don't listen to that one together.
Yeah. So it was like content that was kind of on that sweet spot between, hey, this is interesting. It has to be interesting enough to hold your attention. If not, you're still thinking about your thoughts. But at the same time, it doesn't have to be like so compelling that you're not able to fall asleep. I don't know, like a true crime series or something like that. Yeah. So yeah, it was kind of, it was interesting. It was an interesting curation problem because we had to find things that were on that edge. History definitely falls into that bucket.
Yeah.
You're not alone.
I also feel like just the voice. For me, it was like the cadence and tone of voice. I was like, oh, this is so soothing. I'm just going to go to sleep. Exactly. Thankfully, my husband was driving, so I could go to sleep. Okay, I'm curious. So this emerged as like an opportunity from what your current podcast customers were doing. What was this, a big segment? Were you seeing that a lot of people were using this use case? Or was it just that it was a segment that was super engaged? What inspired you to double down on this use case?
Yeah, it wasn't one of those, I forget the exact numbers, but it wasn't like a huge segment, like a third or like half of the users were doing this. It was probably more like 10%, something like that. But we did feel that this was a valuable use case. We knew from first-hand experience and also understanding the world of sleep that people suffer a lot when they're not able to sleep. And it's one of those almost like basic necessities. Yeah. And so we felt that, hey, this could be the seeds of a powerful use case and maybe something that can help a lot of people, but also drive meaningful revenue for the company.
Yeah.
Because maybe the willingness to pay for being able to fall asleep is different than the willingness to pay for like a premium podcast listening experience or a premium podcast discovery experience. So yeah, those were the seeds. And if I think at the time, since we had connections to the YC network, we remember the Justin TV to Twitch kind of pivot, and I think the numbers there were like 7% or something were doing gaming content on Justin TV. So it wasn't like a huge, but it was a valuable use case. So
yeah,
that's how we were inspired. Yeah. But clearly things have veered off very far from there. And yeah, happy to kind of share things, continue evolving. But that was definitely like the seeds.
Yeah, let's get into this a little bit. So it sounds like you identified this like segment that was, what I love is the way that you just described that is a lot of how I talk about assessing opportunities. It's not that everybody was affected by this use case. It's that for the people that were affected by it, it was a really valuable use case. And so maybe that brings out this willingness to pay. Amazing. Yeah. Okay, so you started by getting into kind of audio content, which makes sense as a podcast player. How did you start to get into, let's evolve this into an AI sleep coach?
Yeah, so the first thing we did as we were getting into sleep more deeply, we decided to do some research. And here we're entering your wheelhouse. So I'm excited, but also a little bit like wary. But yeah, we actually had the blessing and the luck to be able to have been working with Bob Mesta from Rewired, one of the Jobs to Be Done OGs.
Mm-hmm.
And so he actually helped us to put together a research project from scratch to map out some, what were the user segments of folks in the world of sleep. And I'll try to simplify it, but long story short, we found like four segments. The first two were the right fit for a solution like the audio one that we were developing, because these were folks who they wanted to like just fall asleep at the beginning of the night or in the middle of the night without necessarily like changing their habits or overhauling their routine. They were just like very focused on, I want to solve this right now, get through this night in particular, and ideally without medication. So the audio app we saw was similar to a sleeping pill, but natural. This will just put me to sleep and I'll solve this. And then there were other segments, two other segments that had more to do with people who had lots of sleep difficulties and they had been able to solve them through a combination of, we call it do-it-yourself sleep hacking. So it's throwing lots of things at the wall and seeing what sticks. So changing routines, changing habits, acquiring all sorts of different products from like sound machines to like bedding to changing the temperature of the room, like all these different things. And we were only talking and interviewing the ones who had been successful and had gone through that experience. But what was striking to us is that there wasn't like a very clear single direct path to get there. People were trying all sorts of things on their own. And it was a bit of a Wild West situation. So even though we were working on the audio app, we were intrigued to see, hey, like there's lots more people struggling like this. and they don't have a very straightforward way of solving this problem.
Yeah.
Just like there's a big opportunity here. This is really, we were talking to the successful folks who had struggled a lot. We could only wonder like how many people were probably like couldn't make it all the way and just would never would start trying to in this do-it-yourself sleep hacking.
Yeah, okay, so I shared before we started recording, this use case resonates with me so much because my husband is this person. Like, we have played with room temperature, he has a sleep mat, he's tried different eye masks, he tries different audio, he's tried white noise machines, like weird things that make your head cold, like literally anything and everything under the sun. But so I was really excited when you reached out because I'm definitely going to be telling him, hey, you got to check out this app.
Yeah, that's great. And it also resonates with me personally because I've been that person too. I've been using an Oura Ring for 80 years now and tried all the cooling mattresses, like gadgets. Yeah. And so I've been down those rabbit holes as well. And it's a bit of a passion. So.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get into the AI sleep coach. So give me a high level overview of how the product works, and then we'll get into the origins and how you knew AI could help with this. But let's just start with what does it do today?
Initially, at least right now, it's digitized an approach that actually exists that's quite effective to help people solve their sleep problems. So yeah, I was describing before this process of do-it-yourself sleep hacking, where there actually is a better way that has in like it's clinically researched and proven to work, to have like efficacy for 80% of people and efficacy that lasts for years. And this tool is called cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. So it's a flavor of cognitive behavioral therapy, but applied for insomnia with like specific pillars that we can talk about. The big issue with this, or there's a few different issues, but this has to be, nowadays it's done by folks who have been trained in this methodology. Some are therapists, some are coaches, but usually this can cost thousands of dollars to get this type of solution or treatment or protocol.
It's also not available everywhere.
Exactly,
I know my husband was referred to this, but we don't have practitioners in our area.
Exactly. So you can probably find folks who are able to do it, but need to pay out of pocket thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
Or if you want to get someone who's really good and they maybe take insurance, you might have to wait like a year and a half because of wait lists. And our lead scientific advisor, Dr. Ashley Mason, she's at UCSF, and that's exactly her case. Like, she has a year and a half wait list. And not only that, but she also does this in groups. So it's a group which can have its benefits too because of different dynamics that can be helpful. But yeah, you might be waiting a year and a half to see an amazing practitioner to do this in a group. And in the middle, you're really struggling. So what we're trying to do with REST, it's a voice AI product. People come to the app every single day to log their sleep. They keep a sleep diary. It's an important piece of the protocol. And they have a check-in with the voice AI that does a few different things, right? But it supports them, educates them, and guides them through this step-by-step process. Initially during 8 weeks to do like the big kind of sleep makeover, we call it. And then after that, to make sure that people are able to sustain that over time and navigate potential life challenges that might happen that many times generate setbacks when it comes to sleep.
Yeah, one thing I'm curious about is why voice? Why was it important for this to be voice-based?
As Marta was saying, we started working with different experts that taught us about CBTI, this insomnia-related treatments. And one thing that we realized is a big part of the results of this program have to do with the people, our users, trusting the program and trusting the science behind it.
Mm.
And that is hard to accomplish with a cold mobile app that just shows you things that you have to do every day. And we ask a lot from our users. We ask them to first log their sleep every day, tell us about their night every morning, a pretty detailed questionnaire on how they slept. But also we ask them to change their routines and their behavior. During the program, we start setting times. For instance, we first set an ideal wake time that they have to follow every day for the program to start retraining their brains according to the science. And then we ask them to have an earliest bedtime, which is also like a very important commitment from our users. So we had a challenge there that had to do with how do we get them to follow what we are asking from them using just a mobile app. So there was a trust issue there. We could talk about science. We could have pictures of our experts and people guiding this from the science perspective, but still there was this personal touch that was missing that was really important in their practices and the sleep expert practices. So that's why this new world of LLMs, because we were thinking about machine learning and how that could help us understand users and understand their data. But this new world of having the remarkable capabilities of LLM for conversation, for instance, was a game changer. And what we started doing was trying to mimic some of that experience that the people had with experts in a digital app. Why voice, you were asking? That's more recent for us, like really recent. We only started testing with voice in July. But what we are finding out from our users and from the interactions that we see is that the voice is warmer than just text, and it's more intimate in a way. And that lets the users, for on one hand, open up more about something as private as sleep is, the struggle with sleep. But also, it creates a different type of connection. And that's where trustworthiness is really important for us. And voice took us a longer way than just text.
Yeah, I like this. And I'm assuming the voice is two-way. So like in the morning when they're filling out their questionnaire, are they now being asked questions?
Not yet. Okay. That's something that we are also, we consider several times. The thing is, the questionnaire is more about having, trying to find out the times where they went to bed, when they tried to start falling asleep, when they actually fell asleep, how much time they were awake during the night, what time they woke up, and when they left the bed. And that's very like numeric. So we're struggling between the UX of just picking times from several pickers or discussing your night and then having to figure out the actual diary from that. But that's definitely something that we will explore again soon.
Once the sleep logging finishes, people do have a check-in. That's like a both ways. It's a conversation. One distinction about our type of product is that the AI comes with an agenda every day, and it's driving the conversation versus maybe like a classic, I don't know, ChatGPT situation in which you go with an intent and you start the conversation as the user. So the check-in happens every day and the AI has an agenda. We can talk about how we generate that agenda because there's some interesting technical details there. But yeah, sometimes it comes with information that it needs to tell you or brief you or educate you because something important has happened or will be happening in the program in terms of milestones. And sometimes it's more about talking about the data or debriefing a certain behavior that we're detecting from the data that that needs to be addressed or changed in order to be successful with the program. But at any point, the person can interrupt and just kind of stop it, double click. And that's powerful. At the same time, presents some challenges.
Yeah.
But yeah. And if I can say one more thing about voice that I think is important, we also, beyond the empathy and intimacy that I think is really important, as Ignacio was saying, we also built from our own experience with ChatGPT, Advanced Voice Mode, and others, that it really is quite, you can really share much more effectively or faster the amount of information you can share about your personal situation, your challenges. And we do need to get context from the user than typing into a mobile phone and having to write every single word, every single character. So that was also a consideration. Yeah, I think we're blending different sources of insights to come up with that. And now, by the way, we introduced that in July. Before it was text-based. And so in July, we introduced voice, started testing it out. Right now, it's the majority of the users' interactions. And we're logging like hundreds of hours of voice conversations every month. And it's been growing pretty fast.
Okay, so walk me. I'm starting to get a clear picture of, as a user, how I'm using this app. It sounds like in the morning, I wake up, I'm logging my sort of history of what happened the night before with sleep. I'm then having a conversation with the AI about maybe the AI has things for me. I'm getting a morning briefing. It's based on what's happened in the past. At what other point in the day am I interacting with the app?
Yeah, that's a good question. After the check-in, by the way, there's also educational material that we have like different articles and quizzes in the app that we point the people towards kind of navigating and completing. That's the main point of interaction with the app. We're also about to introduce a wind-down routine feature that has more to do with the evening part.
Yeah.
And people, by the way, there's the legacy of the original audio app that we started with. We still have a good amount of like a really good library of content. for folks. And though that content is used at night too, like the meditations, the white noise, the progressive muscle relaxations, different tools. So there's some definitely some use in the evening, and we're trying to build that out more. But I would say that the chunk of it happens in the morning, ideally as soon as people wake up and they have that fresh memory of exactly how the night went and the different parts of that.
What I think is great about this is that in some ways you started by trying to replicate what somebody might get with a therapist. But because you're on the phone, you actually, this every morning check-in is not something a therapist could support.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so it's like you're bringing a mechanism that is evidence-based and we know works, but you're also pushing it somewhere where it on its own couldn't even go, which I think is a pretty cool use of technology.
One important thing is the experience that we collected from the experts is very different in the sense that they only meet with their patients once a week.
Yeah.
And they review the entire week with them. Whereas we have this ability of checking in with them every day if needed. They don't have to, but most of them do because it has a lot of value for them. And correct course earlier if needed. So yeah, that's a main difference as you were pointing out.
And we're thinking of that concept as like bite-sized sessions that people have every day. And these are shorter than the maybe chunkier sessions that they have with a professional on a weekly basis. But yeah, we think it's a pretty interesting, unique approach and that we also need to learn and perfect how to best make it work.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go back to the beginning of, you have a very clear customer problem, which I love. And this is happening in parallel with the rise of LLMs. You see the connection. What were some of the earliest things you did to kind of prototype or figure out, is this even going to work?
Yeah, the first approach that we tried, I think, was right when GPT-4 came out or a few months after that. Lots of people were going into ChatGPT and kind of asking it to create like a meal plan or like a workout plan. So in our case, what we did was trying to create like a sleep improvement plan. Let's see, like because we had in mind these segments that were like throwing spaghetti at the wall, and how it still didn't have a good solution. And at the time, we weren't as familiar with CBTI as an approach, but we were curious, like, hey, could there be a better way already with AI and this capability of creating plans for people? And it could do something quite interesting, clearly not as effective as what we're doing right now. And it was more like, I would say, sleep hygiene-based. Mm-hmm. So like the more accepted best practices of, I don't know, having some certain routines, avoiding screens and all of those things. But it gave us a glimpse. Okay, this is interesting. Like, it knows the domain of sleep already, and it can like assemble like a step-by-step plan for people. And so that was the initial seed for that. And then the first feature we actually released in the app was almost like a chatbot, like a sleep chatbot, that what it would do, and Ignacio built this, so he can tell you more about it, but it was about gathering data from the user in chat format and then giving them a list of recommendations or like top areas to work on.
Yeah, there's something you said that I want to highlight because I think for people that don't have sleep challenges, it's easy to think this fixes the problem. So ChatGPT responded with sleep hygiene tips. We all know sleep hygiene. We've all read about the articles that are in the national newspapers, right? Go to bed at the same time, make your room cold. And this is great. If you're a pretty good sleeper, but you struggle a little bit, sleep hygiene might fix it. But I think what's really underrated is this: there are people out there where it's not, sleep hygiene is not the problem. And I think that's where this CBTI stuff is really designed to help. Of lowering the temperature in your room is not going to get you there. There's more to the story.
And there's a few concepts that I think that are really interesting and fascinating. So the idea about CBTI is about like addressing the underlying root causes that cause these sleep problems. And by the way, insomnia affects like 10 to 15% of adults in the US. So it's like a pretty large amount of people, and everyone at some point in their life is expected to have insomnia or be affected by it. And so the way, there's this notion of precipitating factors and perpetuating factors in the world of CBTI. And precipitating factors are what causes the sleep problem in the first place. And this can be maybe like a life stressor or maybe like a beautiful thing like having a kid or a baby, but it really changes your patterns. And the perpetuating factors are the kind of like compensatory mechanisms that one develops to deal with the sleep problem in the first place, but they are actually the ones that continue perpetuating the problem. and make it very sticky, right? So you need to, like, even though the original maybe stressor has been resolved, like you're not already maybe health problem or are stressed by work. So CBTI addresses those underlying root causes in a methodical way, which is not what sleep hygiene gives you. Sometimes we have these conversations like, why can't you just use like ChatGPT, right, for this? You actually need like a blueprint, a step-by-step process, and to be kind of guided and taken by the hand to this experience.
I actually think that I love that you talked about like meal plans and fitness plans, because I think fitness is very analogous to this. There are some people that are good at exercising, and if they just have a plan, they will do it. Those are our good sleepers. And there's some people where like they don't, they need more guidance. Like they're injury prone, or they don't know how to do the move, or they have limiting beliefs about they're not athletic, or there's more to the story there. Yes. And I think what's hard about these problem spaces is for people that don't, that are in that simple case of I just need information, it's not always clear that for other people, the problem is much deeper than that.
Yeah, that's great. I think that's a great point. And we also see similarities with fitness, but this is something maybe that needs to be like a mindset that needs to be changed, and we're trying to work on that. It's the fact that with fitness, it's not like you get fit and you're fit for life and that's it. I made it. Like, you're pretty good. You're pretty cool if that was the case. But we think sleep works in a similar way. Maybe there's a problem and you work on it and you solve it, but then there's maintenance and optimization and fine tuning, and you need to keep working on it so that it doesn't kind of regress, because there's lots of forces in our day-to-day lives that conspire against good sleep.
Yeah.
And so that's why we think rest also has to play a part in that maintenance after we take people through the initial process.
Yeah, man, I could spend an hour and a half just nerding out on the CBTI part, but we're an AI podcast, so we should probably
Let's get back to chat window.
So you started with the chat window in the app. Tell me, what did you learn from that?
That's a good question. What did we learn from that? We learned different things. I would say there's learnings probably. Then there's, I think, more the customer value learnings. So what we were doing at the time, and Ignacio was leading this, maybe Ignacio, can you tell a little bit about the process we were doing on reviewing those conversations with the therapist we were working at the time?
Sure. There was a point in time when we started gathering a lot of conversations with users, and we didn't know how well we were faring in terms of like the sleep science behind what we were sharing with them. So we started working with a sleep expert who reviewed the different interactions. We had like turn by turn from user and coach, and had them like manually label those interactions to understand what was a good or bad, let's just call it good or bad interaction, like one interaction. And from that, we started learning things that we needed to do to tweak the way this session was behaving. But we also realized that wasn't enough. Like, we needed something more than just having a conversation where the agent was providing advice. So that was a key learning from that part of the experience.
Let me ask you a question. And I can also imagine, I hate asking questions like this because I don't mean it to be like a hot seat question. Oh. It seems like sleep is, if you're just building a sleep tracker, that doesn't feel like you're in the health space. And I'm not sure HIPAA comes into play. It's just like you're voluntarily adding data to a log and you can look at it. I feel like as soon as you add a chatbot and the chatbot is giving advice, now you're creeping a little closer to your product is turning into almost therapy, but you're not a therapist. Like, how did you wrestle with these questions? Like, and like, I can imagine this started to raise a lot of like ethical concerns. And especially now you're bringing in therapists to look at the conversations, which immediately to me thinks about, is the customer thinking about this as a privileged health conversation? Like, how did you navigate this?
Yeah, Teresa, that's a great question. And I think it's an ongoing learning experience for everyone in the space, even as, I don't know, even regulatory changes per state, like there's lots of implications here. But the way we've thought about this so far, at least, is being clear that we're not a medical treatment and that we're not in the app. You won't see us diagnose anyone. So we're not diagnosing people whether they have insomnia or not. So that's like an intentional thing that we're not doing in the app. We're also not like working with any of their medications, or we're not like, we have explicit guardrails against that. I'm talking about evils and that. Maybe we'll get into that later, but so we're careful not to get into the medication side of things. And we're very clear in our language, in when we talk about product, the marketing, that, and even the disclaimers that we show people and we ask them to accept and obtain, that this is like health and like a wellness tool that like to be used by people. But if they are getting into a realm of a medical, if they have other medical conditions or there's medications, and they should also consult with their physician, and that they shouldn't, the people that we talk to, they still have the primary care practitioner. They're part of the equation, right? We do bring in professionals and therapists to advise us because we take it seriously. And we want to do this in the most serious professional way. So that's like how we've navigated so far. Of course, also with like legal counsel and just making sure that we understand the full ramifications of everything we're doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, but we don't rule out in the future maybe going more formally into the medical category.
Yeah.
We think that could have also, it has potential, has trade-offs, and that's something that we'll continue to navigate. But that's, I think, how we've laid it out so far. I don't know if you have any follow-ups there.
You framed it really nicely in that you talk about a health app versus a wellness app. And I think all apps in the wellness space are navigating this line of what it, and I think the important part, which it sounds like you are doing, is just how do you set the right expectations with your consumers and to make sure you stay on that right side of that line.
Yeah, yeah. And we do talk a lot about CBTI, but we're also, part of what we're excited about is bringing in other adjacent disciplines into the app. And that's also something that we've been doing because there's an element of KM biology. There's an element of like neuroscience with habit building. And so on the one hand, we do believe that there's this potential of building not only like a CBTI knowledge expert, but like a super expert that brings in all these adjacent domains that you couldn't find in a single professional. And at the same time, we're careful to say, even though we talk about CBTI, this is not like a CBTI treatment.
Yep.
This is not CBTI therapy. This is an app that is inspired on those principles and is trying to like educate people and help them. They want to apply them. But yeah, that's a line that we try to draw as well.
Yeah, and I think that fits really nicely with your sort of, you called it your sort of sleep hackers, do-it-yourself hackers, of try some of these things and get some experience with it. And I think what's nice about that is it can help solve this problem of, I don't, seeing a therapist sounds scary. I don't know what CBTI is. And this could be like a very gradual introduction to some of the ideas. And then maybe if they're at the point where they do need a medical intervention, they then move on to working with a therapist.
Oh, really? Yes. Yes. And just picking up something we were talking about before, but this, what I think is also really interesting about what we have is the fact that it's available 24/7. I think that's also quite powerful. Not only do people are able to meet with them on a daily, with the app on a daily basis, but it's available 24/7. And we've heard from users that have had really powerful conversations in the middle of the night. Not so much like understanding the science of sleep, getting some support or expressing their frustration because some parts of this process can be challenging as changing habits can be. So I think that's also has been quite powerful for people.
Okay, so I want to go back to Ignacio. You were sharing that you added this chatbot. You started to learn by just looking at the traces, the turn by turn back and forth. You had a therapist help with kind of tagging what's good, what's not good. So your first round of error analysis. I love that you brought in a domain expert for that. What happened next? How did the product evolve from there?
At that point, we were just building our own very rudimentary agent on top of GPT-4. And we found a lot of like issues with that. It wasn't all that easy and it wasn't all that smooth for us. And we wanted to be able to focus on the actual problem. Like we wanted to be able to focus on having this coach know, get the knowledge that we wanted to know, but also understand the user. So we soon moved into OpenAI's assistant platform, which is a way of delegating the managing of the agent to this platform. And that gave us a lot of advantages and we lost some of the control, but it was good enough for the stage that we were at. So when we moved to that, we started working on prompting and making sure that through prompting, we were able to reflect everything that we needed this agent to know about the product, about the protocol and how to follow the protocol, and about the science behind CBTI and sleep in general. We wanted it to be supportive of the user, but also in this search of trustworthiness, be able to explain the science behind it and get the user to commit because of that backing science. So that was the next step. And we improved our UX in general, in terms of how interacting with the agent looked like and how smooth that interaction was. So that was the next step.
Explain some of the UX improvements. Like, if you started as just a chat box, did that evolve with this step?
Yeah, like at first, this chatbot was something that was like on demand that the user had to go to. And we realized that we wanted to have that checkpoint at very specific. We wanted the user to be able to do it whenever they wanted, but also to try to push that interaction to very specific moments. And the first big checkpoint that we identified was right after filling your sleep log, because you just thought about your night, which is a very important part of this protocol, like having this introspection to understand what your night was. You just thought about it. You just got like a short report back talking about things that went well and things that didn't go that well. How are you progressing week over week? So you have all of that information. It's a great time for you to check in with the coach. At first, it was just a check-in where the coach had the information on that night and a little bit more context on how the user was faring in the program and was able to answer questions from the user. But then we started making it a little bit more complex over time.
Okay. Yeah. Tell me about those evolutions.
Okay. The first thing that we identified, as we talked earlier, is that voice was a game changer for our users. So we gave them these two alternatives. Like, you could continue in text, a regular old-fashioned chat, or you could try voice. We were actually, many of us were skeptical because we thought that talking out loud might not be the best for some scenarios. Like, maybe you're with your spouse or you are in a public setting and you don't want people to hear you talk about that. But also we have a big range of users in our user base, but a lot of them are older people who might not be that familiar with some part of the technology, and we didn't know how voice was going to impact them. But it was actually great, and users were opening up more and were having longer interactions once we enabled voice, because as Marto said, it is an easier interface. As long as the context lets you, speaking is easier than typing. So we gave them those two options, but we had a new problem. Now we had to maintain two different ways that should be doing roughly the same thing, text and voice. And to accomplish
because
that,
voice is outside of the OpenAI ecosystem. Maybe you can share more on
that. Okay.
Yes, I was going to that. There are different ways of implementing the voice part. And we started working with this platform called VAPI, which is a platform for building voice agents where they handle, they integrate the whole stack. You can choose which models to use for different parts of the stack, but they help you with the whole integration and the whole streaming part of the actual conversation. So what we did is we started working with VAPI and we relied on text-to-speech and speech-to-text as two layers of this stack, but we continued using OpenAI as our LLM model provider. But it was a different interface in terms of the assistance platform and the actual OpenAI GPT-4 model that we use as part of the VAPI stack. So we started having some differences that we little by little understood and learned to live with.
So it sounds like you're using a third-party tool that handles the text-to-speech to text back and forth. And then same with even in your OpenAI instance where it's all text-based, you're relying on the model to handle the turn-by-turn conversations. Does that mean you're like at this point, most of your design is in that system prompt and the system prompt is doing the heavy lifting of like how to respond in the conversation?
Yes. And at first it was just a system prompt and a huge system prompt grew and grew and became a problem because of the size of the context, but also because it was harder for the LLM to focus on the right thing at the right moment, right? Because it had a huge system prompt. So we stumbled upon that problem. And the next thing that we did was explore alternatives for retrieval augmented generation. We tried a few, like we explored a few tools like Pinecone or the TCP offers several vector databases that we could also leverage. But we're still in the world of let's start simple and see what we learn, and then we can make our architecture more complex. So we fell back into OpenAI's file-based RAG. We used that in the text-based chat, but also we have a similar flavor in VAPI of file-based RAG, which allowed us to remove a lot of the burden of the general knowledge, some of the program knowledge and other stuff from the actual prompt into different items that could be queried by the assistant as they were discussing things with the user.
So it seems like in your first design, that system prompt had to do all the heavy lifting. Like it had to have all the general knowledge about sleep, all the very detailed knowledge about CBTI. It had to have knowledge about the user that it's interacting with. And then throughout the course of the conversation, it could pull from that knowledge. But I think a lot of teams have seen the bigger your system prompt, the more confused the LLM gets. So you moved to this RAG step where you said, let's take all that, I'm assuming, general information about sleep and CBTI and other sleep methodologies, put it in RAG. Did the RAG step also include like user information, or did that stay in the system prompt?
No, the user information, at least for now, is staying in the prompt because we want it to be very central and make sure that the focus is always going back to that, not just because some question, because the way RAG works, it requires something in the immediate context to trigger a query, a semantic query that actually matches what they will retrieve. So we wanted the user data to be always present. But that wasn't the last step.
So now you still have parallel paths. You have your text-based OpenAI world and you have your voice agent on VAPI. I'm assuming in both of those contexts, you basically could expose a tool that gave the agent access to that the retrieval step.
Yeah,
okay.
Correct.
Okay, so it was still up to the agent to decide, I need something in this context tells me go retrieve.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah,
part of the prompt now, as we took that out, right, as we took the content out of the prompt and put it in RAG, we have to be very clear in the prompt what are the guidelines and what are the moments in which it's time to retrieve that information. And that was a bit of a trial and an error process.
Yeah.
Because it never works as expected.
This is, I think, this is why, like, when people build on these third-party agent platforms, you get a lot of uplift to get started, but you will also lose a lot of control. And so that's why this piece is particularly interesting to me of, like, you have to be very thoughtful about how you design both the system prompt and your tools to make sure the agent doesn't, that's all you have control over, right? To make sure the agent is being steered in the right direction.
Totally. And just maybe to give you more context, I think this happens to many teams right now, but our team didn't have any previous experience on any of this before starting to work with this type of AI. So we are learning as we go. And part of that learning had to do with trying to understand some of these trade-offs. Should I be taking full control over my agent, or can I rely on something like OpenAI's assistance? And we explored, for instance, LangGraph. Should we be building a huge, complex architecture with LangGraph to have all of the control that we want over everything that happens in our conversation? And the answer was maybe, but clearly not right now. So that will have to wait until we fully understand what are the problems that we need to solve. And we have the initial problems solved first, because those are the most pressing. We also explored other stuff, and we can get into that later, but we explored ways of having the memory of what the user said in the past controlled by more complex architectures, like using MEM0 or stuff like that. And still, we are like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. We can do with much less right now. Let's keep iterating and let's keep trying with our users what works and what doesn't before we optimize early.
Yeah, I like this a lot. I think it's so easy, especially with new technology, to have FOMO and go after the like trendy technologies And this is an area where it's really easy to over-engineer a solution before you need it. And it sounds like you did a really good job of letting your users tell you what to improve and what the next step should be. And that really drove your sort of iterations.
Totally.
The underpinning to this process, that the different upgrades that Ignacio's mentioning, we have, I think, one more to go, but the underpinning was like a weekly error analysis process that we've been running to really be able to understand, okay, what are the main problems and failure modes, and therefore create like a bit of a roadmap for, we call it the AI engineering roadmap, right? Like, what are the things that we need to be shipping or prioritizing? But we're staying very close to that, very close to those traces and understanding that.
And do you continue to do that with a domain expert?
We took the course, right, from Shreya and Hamel, right? And that's how we saw you as a guest speaker. So I'm the benevolent dictator. So we have that model.
Yeah.
Because I'm able to I have also an engineering background, so I'm able to bringing lots of those areas of expertise. But of course, when it comes time to, okay, we need to understand that there's clearly some sleep knowledge gaps here.
Yeah.
We work with, in this case, Dr. Mason, and that's what we did for the RAG, for example. There were some gaps, certain questions or that topic that were defaulting to the GPT knowledge, and it wasn't perfect. And she was doing things differently when she was working with folks. So we brought her knowledge and we codified it.
That's great. Okay, so you introduced a RAG step. What happened next?
So the next part had to do with, we talked about how trustworthiness was one of the pillars, but the other one was personalization. Because what you get, if you go to GPT and you ask about a problem, you are always, you have memory, but you're always starting from zero in the sense that there is no progress within your long-term journey in a tool like that. But we wanted to be able to have the coach guide the user through the process, understanding where the user was and understanding the struggles that the user had already had. So we added two things to our still not managed by us agent. One was memory. We knew that we wanted the coach to remember some specific things from the user. We didn't want the user coach to forget stuff like issues that the user had that prevented them from following some guidance, or things like if they have a dog and that dog wakes them up very early in the morning, stuff like that. We wanted to make sure that some areas were covered in terms of remembering the user. So we added a very naive memory to our agent where we have, technically what we do is we review the conversation after it happened, not manually, another prompt reviews the conversation after it happened and extracts things that happened that were mentioned that go to these categories, and it keeps them as memories. We know when that happened, in what context it happened, and then every time we have a new conversation with the user, we try to pull from that memory and bring the relevant stuff. Relevant because of time constraints and not because of topical things, but relevant nonetheless. So memory was really important for us to start giving the user the trust that they were with someone who knew them, that were starting to learn from them.
I can imagine that step, even just that step, has a lot of complexity. If somebody's traveling and they're experiencing jet lag and they're on the road for 10 days, you want to remember that, but not forever.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, we're so tell me, how did you manage that?
We're still struggling with that, but we are trying to come up with heuristics that help us at least as least possible. And one of the things is that the more recent a memory is, the more relevant it is. That is almost always true. And if a memory is old enough, maybe we shouldn't be putting it into the prompt for now. And then we can start understanding which memory should be more perennial and which should have an actual, a specific expiration date. We are actually discussing this right now. How do we identify the expiration date of a memory so that we have the right context every time?
Almost like a product within a product.
Oh, yeah.
But it's even just what you described, it sounds even a little bit almost like what humans do. If I talk to you and you tell me something, the next time I see you, I might remember it. But if I see you 3 years from now, I might not remember it.
Correct.
And then I could imagine frequency, how often does it come up, could strengthen the memory. Yeah, so fascinating. I love this stuff.
We're constantly trying to emulate the feeling that people have when working with a really good professional.
Yeah.
That, and we see frustration when people see that it's for, the AI has forgotten. And we see that in the traces or the user interviews. Like, they are like, you keep on asking me the same thing every day.
Yeah.
Or we already talked about this. And it's like the same frustration. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's the same frustration I think people would have if they're talking to a professional who like forgets in between visits who you are,
yeah,
or what was your story, and you lose trust. And also, I think beyond the trust, which is important, the effectiveness, right? We're trying, yeah, to actually use that knowledge to deliver better solutions that are going to have a higher likelihood of working for people.
Yeah.
Because they need to change habits, and changing habits is hard. So we're trying to work with them to find like the right angle.
Yeah. All right, Ignacio, I think you were going to keep going. You added
next
memories.
Step?
Yeah.
Yeah. Marto mentioned this idea that as a product, as an AI product, one of our differences is the user doesn't have to come to us with an intent. We can start the conversation as a coach. Mm-hmm. We can tell the user what we should be discussing today. And up until very recently, that was only driven by the users last night and how they did there. But we started introducing what we call a dynamic agenda, where we, before starting the check-in, the everyday check-in, we gather all of the data from the user and come up with three items that we should be discussing in order of priority that we should be discussing today, considering what happened last night, because that might be the most pressing thing if it was a very bad night, but also which stage in the program the user is at, and other things that might have happened. For instance, maybe the user had a good night's sleep, but was not compliant with what we were asking from him. So we want to pick that and use it as a topic to discuss to make the user understand why it was important to follow a certain guide, but also to explain to the user what will happen if they keep failing or how they can get back on track and what will happen in the program next. So we were trying to make it just not just aware of what happened, but also aware of where the user is at and have a different type of conversation each day that tailors to the specific moment.
And I'm assuming that's happening as a separate, like, off... I guess it can't really be totally offline because you have to take into account the night before.
Yeah, so there is a time gap between the moment where the user finishes logging their sleep and they start the conversation. They finish their logging, they get a short report, and they are prompted to start a conversation with our coach. They can choose text or voice, but they choose voice very often. During that time, we have to process all of that and make sure that we build the agenda. If we take longer, either we make the user wait a little bit or we start with no agenda. So we have to deal with that. But yeah, that was a challenge because we cannot do that in a very long offline process.
Yeah.
Unless we were okay with not considering the previous night, which might be the most pressing thing to discuss.
Yep. Okay. And so I'm assuming this 3-bullet point agenda is getting added to that are you still on these 2 agent systems and you're adding these bullet points as just context of this is how we're driving the conversation?
Yeah, not only that. So it becomes an agenda like bullet points, but also each item in the agenda, it is its own like mini prompt. So we have a framing prompt that tells the assistant how to behave with the agenda. And then each item in the agenda explains what they should do. It's not just 2 or 3 lines. It's several lines of prompt that have to do with what to do in that item.
Okay. And I'm assuming that prompt is very tailored to that user based on its history and what you're finding.
Correct. Like the prompt has a general part, and then it has the agenda, which is completely tailored to the user. And then a long part of the prompt has to do with data on the user. Previous night, their previous week, the week before that, and then the relevant memories that we want the agent to pull from when discussing things with the user.
Okay. And still 2 paths, OpenAI plus VAPI.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I know you are interested in the real world challenges. We definitely find it more. Most of the people are using VAPI now because that's the preferred method, and we're seeing more success there, so we're pushing it more. And we've had some issues in OpenAI in trying to like replicate some of the things we've accomplished on the VAPI side. So not everything that we've been developing lately, it's almost two separate like parallel branches of development.
Yeah.
And the OpenAI one, chat-based, lags the voice one. And that's a real challenge because it really is two different stacks that maybe you do something in one, but the other one doesn't take it the same way. And so you need to figure out like how do we adapt it and then how we do maintain it. Because we have version control for the prompts, but then start like branching out. So it is a bit messy.
I can imagine. And are we at your current state or is there another iteration?
We're about to ship a very, hopefully end of this week, some upgrades to the memory that I think Ignacio was alluding to that has more to do. Part of the challenge has been that we've created these very long memories, but the way we append it to the system prompt, there's no clear guidance of what are the more recent, more relevant things and what are the older things. So we're going to be shipping like a first improvement in that respect that is going to start splitting temporarily in like kind of yesterday, last week, or older memories, which we built, and some upgrades to some of these agenda prompt snippets Ignacio was talking about so that they leverage memory more heavily. So that we are able, because what we see is this frustration from folks in which the AI is suggesting maybe action steps in order to be able to implement certain behaviors they've been struggling to adapt. But the users get frustrated because we already tried that, or you already said, we already discussed it and it didn't work because X, Y, Z. And I think it's part of how the memory is presented, but also not leveraging it so much as before. So those are some changes that we're making and hopefully... yeah, we're sprinting to get it done this week.
Yeah, you know, what I really like about this story is the very first just now possible interview I did was with Ellen Brandenburger at Stack Overflow. And she was responsible for setting up, like, she ran like a little AI innovation team, like in January of 2023. And they knew nothing. They're like everybody else. LLMs just came out. We're starting with zero. And she said, let's just take one bite of the apple at a time. And I love that analogy because it's so indicative of what so many teams are doing. And this is your story, right? You could have started with this really complicated custom agent architecture, but you actually started with, let's just use OpenAI out of the box and have a system prompt. And then you had to move towards more of an agent model. And then you added voice, and then you added tools, and then you added like memory. And it really just in response to your error analysis, what's the next bite of the apple we have to take? And I think that's just such a great analogy.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I like the next bite of the apple. Yeah, we're trying to deliver as much value as possible in the shortest period of time to users. And so, yeah, error analysis. Yeah, we also do, for the most part, every week we interview a user. And so those conversations also help us inform what to prioritize. And of course, the customer support, also comments coming, so yeah. The different sources. But yeah, error analysis is a really big one.
Okay, let's get a little bit into eval. So I heard earlier there's a guardrail around talking about medications and getting too far into medical topics. Tell me, what else do you have in terms of guardrails and I'd love to even hear how that guardrail works. And then what are you doing to evaluate overall quality?
So maybe I can jump into the evaluation part. As Martin said, we have a strong guidance from Hemel and Shreya, and we do this weekly error analysis continuously, which informs the updates that we do to our prompts, for instance. But we have a little bit of a workflow. As it happens, we had to build some of our own tooling around it because it wasn't enough with the tools that we were able to gather. But we rely heavily on Langfuse, the Langfuse platform, where we have annotation queues that Martin, as our benevolent dictator, reviews periodically. And we feed those with sample traces of everyday conversations, but also we have some LLM-powered evals that are there for us to capture things that have to do with safety or boundaries. For instance, we are very vigilant about not having our coach talk about medication or any medical advice. So we have evals in place to capture any instances of those happening, which fortunately don't, but we want to make sure that if they were to happen, we can pick them and then fix whatever is wrong with the prompt. And as part of being able to iterate fast in this new world of voice, we are experimenting with Hamming, which is a platform for to have consistently reproducible scenarios where a user, an LLM-powered user, discusses with our coach through voice. So we wanted to be able to replicate the voice experience as well in like replicable tests. So basically, that's what we're doing. We are constantly keeping traces of what happens. We are sampling some of those for annotation cues that we review manually. And we have specific LLM-powered evals to capture like problems, basically. Or, yeah, problems and like outliers in any way that could be interesting for us.
And you mentioned what's coming next is a little bit more around memory improvements. Do you have an idea of what's on the horizon after that?
Yeah, there's lots of things, and we have this usually like quarterly roadmap how we think about it, but it definitely keeps on shifting as we learn more. And there's a few different categories. I can share a few, and some others are closer maybe to Ignacio's domain, and she can share. But I think you can think about it like more classic UX, I would say, classic UX or product experience, and then maybe more on the AI, like engineering or intelligence part of it. One thing that we're really thinking about, so we're thinking not only how do we make this thing as smart as possible, but also what's the UX how the world of UX should evolve in this new type of paradigm and product. And one of the things we're thinking about, for example, has to do with creating like a visual language for the different prompt snippets and topics that happen in the agenda. So in the agenda, there's sometimes we talk about data, sometimes there's more education about the sleep concept. Sometimes we're referring to things that have been discussed before and we're doing some kind of accountability or defining next actions. And right now the UI is a bit basic, as most voice products, in which there's just like a voice animation as you're talking to it, but there's nothing to comes with it. And we think we could create a taxonomy and like a supporting visual language according to the type of topic that's been discussed that really captures the user's attention, but also just really supports what we're talking about. So you could think charts for metrics, for example, right? Or when we're talking about some kind of animation, when we're educating on a concept, or even just like writing down the actual next actions and see them visually. So that's one piece that we're excited about. There's a domain when it comes to intelligent beasts, you know, continue to build this super expert and go beyond just CBTI principles or sleep specifically, and maybe going deeper into other adjacent domains that we think could be very supportive. We really like the world of habit building, like the BJ Fogg's the world. And we think, there's great knowledge there. And this is a habit building app to some extent. So we can like bring in those other domains and expertise. We could really go beyond not only what you can get with a single professional, right? You could really get this like best of all the worlds. So that's some of the things that we have very close in our roadmap. But I'll let Ignacio chime in as well.
Sure. Two things that are maybe more on the AI side of things. One has to do with, both have to do with, we want to understand the user better and let the coach show the user how much we know about them, but also be able to operate on that knowledge and make the user behavior adapt with the knowledge that we have. So two things that we want to do are, so far, we only know what the user told us about them because it happened organically in a conversation, in a check-in. But we are exploring this idea of having what we call intake interviews. That could be something that happens only at the very beginning of the journey or at different checkpoints during the journey, where we maybe ask the user specific things because we want to have a more comprehensive idea of what the user's life is and how that affects the program that they are enrolling into. But that alone doesn't make much. We need to also start working on the next generation of memory, and not just the memory that comes from understanding what the user said, but being able to link to combine the things that the user said with the data that we have about the user's sleep. We have like structured data and we have unstructured data, and we want to be able to combine those to be able to do things like, okay, maybe we see a pattern in the user's data, we see an improvement, we see something going worse, and we can relate that to, for instance, a behavioral change that the user referred to in the past. So we want to be able to use the memories that we are collecting from the user, with the data that we're collecting and combine those to explain to the user what is working and what is not working for them.
This is a theme that's emerging that I'm so like enamored with. So many AI products, in order to be good, you have to be really thoughtful about like data layers, right? So like you have memories, you have sleep data, you have like research about CBTI, and then to enable complex behavior, you have to look at, do we need to combine those things in interesting ways? So like in one of our episodes, I talked to this company, ZenCity, where they're pulling a whole bunch of data from citizens. It's like they work with municipalities and they're doing a whole bunch of data with citizens. And then they have to like, they have raw data and then they have like hypotheses and they have insights and then they have meaning. And they've built this like ladder of how they're combining their data to make it meaningful for the agent to understand. And this has come up in my episode with this company, Incident.io. They do like downtime response. They're doing the same thing. Like their agent finds observations, findings, and then it comes up with a hypothesis. And then based on the hypothesis, it generates questions. And there's all these like layers to the data of like, how do we have all these raw bits and combine it in a way that makes it easy for an agent to digest and have intelligence about? And I think this is like such a fun design problem. Like I think I could just do this for a living. It's so fun.
Totally.
All right. This has been amazing. I know we are running out of time. I want to thank you both. You have a really great problem space. It sounds like you're being really thoughtful about how to attack it. And I love that you're really just embodying this idea of take one bite of the apple at a time. So thank you both. I really have enjoyed this conversation.
Thank you, Theresa. It's been great to chat with you.
Amazing. If you enjoyed this conversation, please subscribe in your favorite podcast app and give us a rating as it helps others find the show. Thanks. I appreciate it.